Okay, so we'll get started. So welcome everybody, good afternoon. Welcome to this session where we're gonna take a look at two new services that are coming online later this year for SQL Azure. We've got SQL Azure Data Sync and SQL Azure Reporting. My name's Mark Skirrell. I'm a program manager at Microsoft in Redmond. And actually my team that's building and owns SQL Azure Data Sync. So if you like what you see, please tell me. If you don't like it, please tell me also. So in this session, I want to sort of just provide a quick overview, just a quick summary of the Windows Azure platform. Just take a few slides, a few minutes, before digging into both Data Sync and reporting. So we'll look at those individually, take a look at some demos, and see actually how they can be used together as well as in isolation. And then these are new services. They're in CTP now, coming online later this year. So I thought I'd give you a roadmap, what's available now, what's available coming up in future CTPs, and when to expect the final version and with what functionality. So we'll go through that. So we've got a pretty small room here, not too many people, so feel free at any time to ask questions. Just put up your hand or grab my attention, throw something at me, whatever. We can have more of an interactive session rather than me talking for the full hour and a quarter here. The other thing else also I thought I'd get a handle on first is, you know, where you are and, you know, you move to the cloud or investigating the cloud. So I was wondering how many people have actually developed a project that's running in production in Windows Azure, maybe uses SQL Azure. So we've got a few there. How about looking into, actually just played with Windows Azure, downloaded the SDKs, got a free subscription, many more? Okay, so quite a few. But quite a few people who are maybe just using this conference to get the overview and dip their toes into the water. So I thought it'd be worthwhile, while starting off, outlining sort of the main categories of service. When we talk about cloud services, there are various levels of service that are available in the cloud and that various providers offer. So the very lowest level, there's infrastructure as a service. And this is where, you know, you're going to get effectively utilize someone else's hardware, their servers, their network infrastructure, some of the security systems, and so on. So you don't have to buy those servers. You don't have to manage the servers and networking. You can leverage someone else's infrastructure in their data center. And, you know, there's a ton of advantages to that. But basically, you're still running effectively the same software. You're probably running the same software in a VM. And where really platform as a service comes into play is really, you know, we take that software and it's software specifically built and architected for the cloud. And if we sort of compare, say, SQL Server with SQL Azure, you know, I think that's a sort of a great example. SQL Azure is a great example of something that's, you know, a platform as a service. SQL Azure comes with the capabilities to easily provision servers, databases. It comes with high availability built in, and, you know, a higher level bunch of services that make it easier to manage, easier to administer compared to, you know, SQL Server that you could run on premises. So it's really platform as a service. And then on top of either of these, you know, you can build your software as a service, your end user applications. And when we look at what does Windows Azure provide and the Windows Azure platform, that's really providing both infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. With, as I said, SQL Azure is a great example of that platform as a service. And then hopefully you guys will be writing the applications that sit on top of that, you know, that might run as software as a service. Then also we've got things like Office 365 that have been released that's software as a service as well. So Microsoft's sort of providing the complete platform for you as well as the software as a service applications. So in terms of the platform consists of a lot of components. If you've been to a number of the Windows Azure talks, you know, you see there's a lot of components there. There's a lot of capabilities in this platform. You've got the basic compute, some storage, the overall management, the management portal, and so on. You've got the content caching, you know, queuing and access control with the app fabric. There's a relatively new service called Data Market, allowing you to get at data sets. You know, you pay for use for these data sets. And then there's the SQL Azure, if you like, family of services, the database itself, and then we'll look at reporting and data sync. But all these, the idea is all these capabilities, you know, we give you a lot of flexibility in terms of how you use them. You know, you can choose your language to use for your Windows Azure applications and choose your development tools as well. So in this session, we'll have a look at SQL Azure reporting and data sync, which are new services coming online. Sort of one of the things that should point out is, you know, the database has been available for probably about a year and a half now. And, you know, we're continually refining, adding features to the database, as well as adding these new services. So just a quick summary of sort of the benefits, and when we talked about the platform as a service, you know, what are some of the benefits, or the benefits of platform as a service and SQL Azure in particular? And I think there's sort of a whole bunch of benefits and capabilities around sort of provisioning and deployment. Ease of provisioning, ease of creating servers, databases, either in your regional data center, you know, data center in Europe, say, or data centers even around the world. I think that's one of the things that we're seeing is that, you know, people really like the fact that, hey, you know, you can locate applications, you can locate your data close to your users around the world and create those databases, create those applications, like the opposite side of the world, just as easy as creating them locally in your local data center. Also related to this is sort of the flexibility of the sort of deployment. You know, you can start off small, you know, one or two databases. Maybe you've got a software as a service application, so every new customer that comes on, you know, equates to a new database, and the more customers that you add, you know, you can very easily and quickly deploy new databases. You know, sort of, and really just pay for what you use. And then related to that as well is, you know, if you've got the workloads, I think I gave an example yesterday of ticketing, or maybe a web retailer example where you've got, you're like, predictable peaks and troughs, then you can really leverage, like, the elasticity, the flexibility in creating the databases and creating these servers to add more capacity when you need it, and you pay for that extra capacity. But then, if you like, when your peak goes, then you can, like, remove that capacity, remove the databases, remove the servers, just simply deprovision them, and then you don't pay for them anymore. So it really has a number of advantages there. Whereas, you know, today, certainly, if you were, you know, buying the hardware and so on, you'd pretty much have to buy everything to cater for those maybe couple of weeks a year. Where you have that peak load, and the rest of the time it's sitting there, you know, fairly idle. So the other thing for SQL Azure, one of the other main capabilities that, if you like, you get out of the box is the high availability. With SQL Azure, we always have multiple copies of your data, three or more copies of your data in our data center. So if anything happens to one of those machines, the hardware on one of the machines, the disk, the motherboard, whatever, we've always got multiple copies and be able to switch over pretty seamlessly and very, very quickly to one of those other copies and give you that out of the box without you having to worry about it. And then I think, you know, as well as these new capabilities and this sort of higher level capabilities of platform as a service, it's important to note that we sort of really tried hard to make, you know, a lot of the same capabilities that are available with SQL Server, available in SQL Azure, and also available with the same tools, you know, the same applications, the same developer frameworks, and so on there. So we've really worked hard to try and ensure that you've got the compatibility and can reuse those skills and experiences that you already have with SQL Server. Let's have a look at data sync. We'll start off here and then move on to reporting. So first of all, for data sync, it's our new cloud service. We actually host this. We'll see later. We actually host this up in Windows Azure ourselves, in the Windows Azure data centers. And the first scenario that we target, and it's probably the most popular at the moment, maybe actually 2/3 to 1/3, is really the scenario where people want to link their on-premises data and databases with a SQL Azure databases. You know, so a lot of companies are starting off with, obviously, with, you know, your applications and data, you know, sitting on premises in SQL Server, running there, and maybe creating new applications or supplementing those applications with new applications up in the cloud and up in Windows Azure. But what they want is they want to share some data. So maybe there's some reference data that's like authored and is mastered on premises, but that needs to be available in the cloud, and you want to share that data. There's other examples where maybe there's a new application being written for the cloud, a new website, for example, that's collecting data from the users all the time, and they want that, and that data then needs to be taken down to, you know, their HQ or back down to on-premises, stored in SQL Server, maybe doing some BI there, you know, whatever. So we certainly see, you know, a lot of people wanting to share data between on-premises and the cloud. Certainly at this point where, you know, people are just starting to move to the cloud and have existing applications. So there's an extension to this as well, where you have multiple on-premises locations. In examples I've got here, you know, maybe branch offices or retail stores. And these could be in the same country, or these could be around the world. It's no distinction. And here you can really use the cloud and SQL Azure in a number of ways. We've seen customers that want to maybe have these retail locations running local apps, gathering transactions, and so on. And they want to aggregate that data into the cloud. So have one central place where it can get aggregated, and they can have an overall view, a high-level view, on top of all that data. Another use for SQL Azure really is it's like as a data hub. So perhaps you're not even going to use the data or have applications in the cloud on top of that data, but what you're going to use it for is a hub and a way for these on-premises locations to actually communicate, because you've got this cloud-based hub that's always available, always accessible, and it can use that as a hub in which everyone else can communicate and keep all these locations, branch offices, retail stores, and so on, in sync and share data between them. So and then the other case is maybe you've got a new cloud application, or you've certainly got data now up in the cloud, in SQL Azure, but you want multiple copies of it. So that's the other main, sort of second main scenario that we're going to support with SQL Azure Data Sync, is really allowing you to create and share data between multiple copies, or have multiple copies of the data up in the cloud. And again, that could be within the same data center or any of the data centers around the world where SQL Azure is. You know, there's absolutely no distinction there. And we'll have a look at some of the scenarios or use cases why people are wanting to do that. So those two main scenarios, linking on-premises with the cloud and sharing data between cloud databases. Yes, question. Okay, so the question is, will this work, or will the synchronization capabilities work if you've got mobile workers, a mobile workforce? So Fieldforce or Salesforce, maybe they have a tablet or maybe a phone, local UI running a database. Can you use this service for that sort of application? I would say in the first version, depending on, let's see, if you've got a relatively small number of workers and they're maybe using a laptop and you've got Windows, and we'll see some of the components later on, you could potentially, but I would say we're not really optimizing for that in this first version. It is definitely something that, you know, that mobile workforce and those Salesforce, Fieldforce applications, it's definitely something that we're going to do in a future version and specifically cater for. And almost like the reason I'm so sure we're going to do something there is that my team also owns something called a developer platform called the Microsoft Sync Framework. And we've done a lot of work there in a development platform to cater for these occasionally connected applications or these, you know, applications that are often not on the network, need a local copy of the data. Person needs to be able to use them, update the data, and then sync it back when there is a connection. So I would say you can use effectively V1 of this in a limited way if you've got Windows laptops running something like SQL Express or SQL Server. But in terms of mobile devices, that support would be in a later release. Certainly, you know, hundreds or thousands of mobile devices would be in a future release. And there as well, what we would definitely do is probably utilize something like OData, and it's actually what we've done with the Sync framework, is utilize an open protocol like OData to really provide the interoperability with any client out there. So you can use Windows Phone, you could use Windows, you could have Silverlight offline clients, but we'd also cater for any third-party client as well, you know, like iPhone or Android or anything like that, utilizing an open protocol like OData. So I just want to take a little detour here, a little bit away from data sync, and cover import, export, and what, you know, what's the relationship, because this comes up quite a lot in questions I hear. And really here, I think there's cases where, you know, you're doing a one-off migration or a one-off movement of data from one place to another. You've got maybe a small application running on-premises, data in SQL Server, and you're going to port that over, get it running in the cloud, and you're going to do a one-time migration. Or maybe you're just trying out the cloud. You've got a data set, and you want to move it to SQL Azure. So really, it's just like a one-off, one-time movement of that and transfer of that data. And in which case, you know, people say, well, can I use DataSync for that? And you could, but actually, I don't think it's the best thing to use. I'd say there's plenty of tools out there, probably too many tools, too much choice at the moment, in terms of what you could use to transfer that data. You know, anything from BCP, you know, on an individual table basis, through SSIS, all the way through to, you know, DAX, data tier applications. And I highlighted there's a new DAC import-export that's available on SQL Azure Labs today. That, as well as, is everyone familiar with DAX? You want to know what DAX are? No? Okay. That's a way, like, built into SQL Server, Visual Studio, a way to package up a database schema and all the objects effectively into a package, so you can export that or create it from scratch and then deploy it to a server, you know, and have everything created for you. Just a way to package it all up. But we've got a preview out at the moment of something called DAC Logical Import, where it takes all those objects and certainly all the schema that you have, but then packages that with the data as well, exports the data, packages it into one big file, and then you can import it into SQL Azure or another SQL Server. So that's a, you know, a new thing that's coming out, and there's a preview release out for that on SQL Azure Labs. So really where DataSync comes into play is for the ongoing relationship, like a long-term relationship between these two or more databases. And we talked through some of those scenarios, publishing to the cloud, sharing data between the cloud, or geolocality of data around the world. But it's really the main difference is, you know, you've got this ongoing relationship either in one direction or both directions for that data. Of that sort of relationship for that data and that data transfer. It's going to be transferred over time. And we're only going to transfer deltas as well. You know, so we set up a whole lot of, we set up a number of things to allow us to only transmit deltas. Whereas the one-off case, you're normally transmitting everything. You're normally transmitting the whole database. So data sync is good for that ongoing synchronization. And then I also mentioned the sync framework. If you want to really deeply embed synchronization into your application, then the Microsoft Sync framework will allow you to do that and provides a bunch of capabilities for data synchronization. So let's have a look at this just first scenario of on-premises to the cloud. And I just really wanted to highlight the various, again, cases that we've seen, the various ways people want to leverage this capability. quite frankly, in a lot of cases, people are just very, very simple requirements. Look, I have an application running on premises. I want to publish that data to the cloud, expose it via a website, or expose it via a no data feed. In some cases, there's an application in the cloud. I want the data to flow the other way. I talked about the aggregation case. Again, that could be one way up to the cloud, or two-way, or shared via the cloud as well. We've seen all of these cases. And then finally, more of a sort of like a fan-out. This I've seen a good few times is where, you know, you've got that data sitting in your SQL server. You've got your applications that your the company users are utilizing and updating that data. And then every so often, you want to make that available in various data centers around the world. There's one internal customer I worked with, and you know, every few weeks, there's a whole bunch of updates on the application to the local database, and then they want to make the data available via Windows Azure and SQL Azure to their users around the world, so it's really close to them, and their users get the best experience, you know, best performance, lowest latency, and so on. Within the cloud, I mean, I think there's a couple of main cases here, and one of which ties in pretty nicely with reporting, and that's you know, more of a read scale out. I want multiple copies of my data. You know, this is fairly common on premises as well with SQL Server. So perhaps, you know, when reporting becomes available, you know, you can utilize the fact that the cloud's available and maybe have a make reports available to a whole lot of customers. So you've got a pretty heavy, high workload on your reports and your reporting that's going to hit the database. So what you want to do is effectively offload that and have multiple copies of the database that are separate from your main OLTP database. So with DataSync, you can absolutely, you know, configure that, have the multiple copies available, have reporting, use those copies, and DataSync will keep changes applied on your main OLTP database, keep these other databases up to date. And then the other case is, you know, called geolocality, or geographically locating your data and applications around the world. You know, I think there's six main data centers with the Windows Azure platform around the world, in Europe and the US and Asia. And again, companies can really leverage that fact, probably much easier than before, and really easily sort of deploy their applications around the world close to their, you know, global workforce or their global users. So again, that's possible to do and use DataSync to sort of keep all those databases in sync, and maybe even then keep them in sync and then keep the data on the on-premises SQL server in sync with that too. And there's no difference as well between databases living in the same data center or databases in different data centers around the world. So that's enough of the slides for the moment. You're probably glad to hear. Let's have a look at DataSync. So I'm going to start off, like a lot of database demos, we'll start off in Management Studio. And especially if you haven't really looked at SQL Azure before, what I'll show you is how effectively we can use the same tools here with Management Studio, whether the database is a local SQL Server or SQL Azure. So I'm going to start off, and I'm going to start off by focusing on that first scenario, linking your on-premises database with the cloud and with the SQL Azure database. So what we can see here in Management Studio is I've got a local database server. It's running on my laptop here. And I've got a couple of databases. And if you like, my master database is the, you know, good old AdventureWorks LT. So that has the standard set of tables in it. And if I select the data there, so you'll see it's populated. So if you like, this is my starting point. I've got a database schema, I've got a bunch of data in it. This is where I'm going to start from. I've also got another database sitting here. This could maybe be my other location, for example, that I want to keep in sync. This has the same schema. I've deployed the same schema here, but it hasn't got any data yet. Next, I'm going to, so that's my local SQL Server databases. So next, I'm going to connect up to a SQL Azure database. So here I've got, you can just see the server name obviously is somewhat different. This is a generated server name. I've provisioned, created a SQL Azure server. And I can connect to that. So we can see that just appears as my SQL server. And I've got a database here. And you can see from the name of the database, I named this just to indicate. So this is a SQL Azure server provisioned, created over in a US data center. So exactly here as my second SQL Server database, I've basically taken the same script here and run it in the multiple locations. Or I could have taken a DAC pack and again deployed a DAC in the multiple locations. But like my second SQL Server location here, I haven't got, I can select from it. I've got the table, but I've got no data. And then finally, I've got one other server, which is in a European data center. It's got a couple of databases. We'll just do the Europe one. And surprise, surprise, exactly the same schema and no data. So, zero rows. So that's sort of the setup. So hopefully you can see I've got one main populated database here, like in my on-premises SQL Server database, and I'm going to get the others all up to date and keep them in sync. So let's, first of all, then, well, let's go now then to the SQL Azure Data Sync CTP2 and the UI. So for CTP2, we've got a fairly basic, fairly straightforward HTML-based UI. I'll show you, I'll give you a flavor for what we've got planned for V1 later on in the presentation. This is a fairly simple HTML-based UI that's working great for CTP2. So I'm actually going to start off here and just go through a couple of the pages. So here we've got like an agents page or agents tab here. And you may be wondering, so if I've got a database and it's sitting on my corporate network running SQL Server, and you've got this cloud-based or web-based management for SQL Azure Data Sync, how do you actually communicate between them? You know, how can you actually get access to that database and my network? And the way we do that is through an agent. So on this tab here, we can see I actually have an agent running. I just named it for my laptop. And that is, there we go. You can see, so if you want to keep an on-premises database in sync with SQL Azure, then you have to install a small Windows service, what we call the agent, on a server on your network that can, in one hand, talk to and connect to the SQL Server database that you want to share. And then on the other hand, we'll communicate out up to our cloud service, off out to Windows Azure, using HTTPS. So that's actually how we do it. And every so often, this agent will wake up and say, hey, is there anything for me to do? And there might be a sync to do, for example. So it'll get that all the changes from your query, your local SQL Server, get the changes, push them up to the cloud, and maybe get some changes from the cloud, and be able to apply that on your local SQL Server. Do you have a question? Okay. Yeah, so does this require a special version of SQL Server? So no, it doesn't. This will work on anything from Express up to Enterprise. And I'm trying to think what versions we're going to support. I think even we'll go back to the 2005 with the latest service pack onwards as well. So we're trying to give you as much flexibility or in terms of what database you have deployed today to be able to use this service and be able to use SQL Azure in the cloud. We'll see the logs in a second. Now there's a sort of databases tab. So there is like a registration process required. You have to sort of explicitly say, hey, look, I want to share data or I want to synchronize with these particular databases. So here, for example, we can see I've got my two local databases here. These are SQL Server databases, my US database, and my Europe One database as well. So you sort of you register those with the service. And then once you've done that, you can create a sync group. So again, hopefully as we go through this, you'll see we sort of really try to keep it as simple as possible, really sort of try to reduce the, you know, even the number of configuration options and so on here. And sort of the main concept, and really the only concept, is that of a sync group. And that's really where you're saying a sync group consists of a number of members or a number of member databases. And, you know, those member databases basically get kept in sync. So if we create, let's just call it AW for AdventureWorks. Now I have a member list here, so I can add. So there's nothing in it at the moment. So now I can start adding my databases. So I'll add that LT1. This is my local SQL Server database that had the data in it. That's the first member. Then I'm going to add, I'll start off with the SQL Azure database in the US data center. I'll add that. And that'll do for the moment. Hit next. So now then here you can see it's actually extracted. I registered the database and it pulled from the database the list of tables that were there. And it's listed them here in this list of available tables. So I can synchronize everything, all the tables if I want. Or I can synchronize a subset of the tables. I'm just going to synchronize these three here. And pulls them over into the selected tables here. Here for CTP3 and for V1, we're going to give you a little more flexibility around the defining the data that you actually want to share, you know, you want to synchronize. So for example, you may have some columns in these tables that you actually don't want in the other location. Or, and actually something that people utilize with the sync framework is filtering. So perhaps you actually only want to publish information that's been through a review cycle or is older than 6 months old or something like that up into the cloud. So you'll be able to set up a filter and look at column values and only synchronize a subset of that data up to the cloud or vice versa. Yeah. Ah, okay. So the question is, I want to perform some operations maybe on the data. Maybe an example would be transform it or maybe manipulate it in a certain way. Is that? Yeah. Right. So no, not in the first version. We haven't got any plans for that. I'm definitely keeping an eye out for feature requests like that. I think I've had some requests for some very, very basic transformations, like my table is going to be slightly different shape in the cloud, something like that, and I want to be able to define a simple mapping. And then, yeah, actually what you're suggesting is maybe a simple way to somehow hook into the pipeline and do some simple manipulations on that data. So I think we could do something there, and it's definitely an area that I'm sort of gathering feedback on. I think sort of the interesting challenge for us there is how much of that we push into more of an end-user tool like this, as opposed to having in something like a version of SSIS, for example, that's more developer-focused and can give you, you know, maybe a lot more control over transformations, over manipulating data along the way. So we're definitely targeting this. It's definitely aimed at a developer. Certainly no one, you know, you're not using Visual Studio or anything for this. This is absolutely a no-code solution. But I think there might be some simple transformations, some simple hooks that we could put in place that would allow you to do you know, some basic things. And then if you want to do any more, you'd have to dip down to something like SSIS and use BI Dev Studio and use the SSIS packages to do something more complex. So maybe afterwards I could get some, you know, a little more information on your scenario. Okay, so I've selected the tables. So these will effectively be copied as is, and in the future you'll be able to select the subset of columns or a subset of rows. And then the final thing on this page here is the schedule. So the normal mode of operation here is, again, we're sort of keeping this pretty simple, but is to allow you just to set up a time period, and you know, when this time period rolls around, we'll actually perform the synchronization and synchronize all the member databases of the sync group. So the smallest level of granularity that we have and we're planning is 5 minutes, and then I think it'll go up to a number of days or maybe even a week or so. We sort of see, you know, requirements all across the board here. But the going down to 5 minutes is what we're planning for the most frequent synchronization. So now I've done that. I'm not going to select the interval because, you know, just for the demo, I'll just manually sync. So now I've created that sync group, and I can do a sync now. So now this has taken us to the logs page. So this is just a page we've got in place so you can see effectively what's happened and what's queued up to happen. So we can see we've got actually 3 tasks here that are queued up to happen and are actually happening behind the scenes. So this is the first time I've actually invoked and configured synchronization for these databases. So the first thing it needs to do is execute these provision tasks. And if you remember on the slide where I showed import-export and so on, import-export was all the data. Synchronization, this was just deltas. So we only communicate deltas or only changes when we sync. But in order to do that, we need to provision change tracking on the databases. So that's one of the main tasks that's happening in this provisioning task. And then once that's done, it'll actually perform the first synchronization. So we can see here all the provisioning is done, the synchronization is done. And then what I can do is just select view log. And then we can see here. So we had just under 1,700 rows in those 3 tables, and that's been uploaded now. And you can see here there's a sort of a download section as well, but obviously I started off with nothing there, so there's been obviously no changes flow down the other way. So let's go to Management Studio here. So here, this was my US1, and that was blank before, so if I execute that now, we can see I've got my data there. So now those 1,700 rows now up in the cloud in SQL Azure. So let's just prove we just do deltas here. Let's do an update. So I'm going to set Mr. Orlando here. Oops. To Mr. Miami. Type customer ID equals 1. Yep. So that's executed. Let's just see that. So his first name is now Miami. Go back to the sync group and select the sync. So this time you can see we've just had a sync task has been created. Provisioning's already done. Don't need to do that anymore. The sync's happening and should be pretty quick. Okay, so that's executing. And done. So here, you can probably see, let me just zoom in here. We can see nothing was applied to sent up on the upload, and on the download, we just had the 1 row. So the download applied, the 1 is just literally the count for the rows. So we had that 1 row I changed has been sent down locally. So if I go back to my local customer table here, so this is on my LT1, my local, then we can see the first name. That row has now been updated. So now we've seen that delta sync in place and working. So the question is, what happens if there are changes on both sides? So we've built this on this Microsoft Sync Framework development platform, which is pretty fully featured synchronization, has pretty fully featured synchronization capabilities. So, you know, we're utilizing that here. So it absolutely, you know, you can have data being updated on the same table, even on the same rows, in the members of your sync group. What data sync will do is it'll obviously detect that there are conflicts and reliably detect that you've got those conflicts. You've updated the data in the two places. And then what it'll allow you to do is select, if you like, which side wins. You'll be able to select, if you like, a winning, you know, maybe it's a SQL Azure side, you consider your master, or you maybe your on-premises SQL server, you consider the definitive or the authoritative database, and you can pick a winner. So absolutely, yeah, we will detect conflicts and resolve them. Today in CTP2, you haven't got any choice how they're resolved. We always resolve them in favor of SQL Azure. But for V1, you'll be able to select the policy there. Yes? Any plans for transactions? So effectively replay transactions? Ah, okay. So can I, almost like when I'm synchronizing, or if I make a change here, can I lock something on the other side? Yeah. So no, and I'd say really that, you know, if you've got an application that's really, I had the question yesterday, someone had a great example of what it was. I don't know, maybe renting a car or, you know, buying something, and, you know, you want to be very accurate on the number of remaining items. Then I don't think really synchronization, and especially this more loosely coupled synchronization, would be that right mechanism to do stuff like, you know, decrement inventory counts or something like that. This is very much sort of catered for a little more loosely coupled. And if you want to do that, I'd really recommend that you have more of a literally an online remote call, and so you're actually making a call to this maybe central database, you know, booking out the car, for example, something like that, and doing that with that one database, which gives you the locking and, you know, those transactional locking guarantees. What we sometimes see is people with those types of applications, sort of more hybrid applications. So what you could do is, you know, you could maybe reserve the car, but you maybe have some of the reference data is local and is synced. So once you've reserved the car, you know, via an online operation, maybe the results of that will flow back down via a sync because of the various tables that are updated on that, you know, authoritative server, and there's some business logic running there. And then the tables that are impacted get synchronized back down in the background, you know, in a few minutes' time. What we'll actually also go through, I'll give you a little update as well on the what we synchronize or not in terms of transactions and what the transactional model is here as well. So I got the sync group and I just had the two members. But at the start, I went through all these different cases of cloud to cloud and multiple on-premises locations. So let's just quickly see that. So I've got my sync group. I can add in another member, which was my other local SQL server. And I can add in my Europe 1 database, so in European data center. Save that. Highlight it, sync. So here we can see, so we've added two new databases. We're going to get a couple more provisioning steps to provision those and then perform the synchronization. So while that's happening, let's have a look a little more at this provisioning, what's actually happening here. So I'll just select this was my SQL Server AdventureWorks LT1. If I F5 the tables here, so if you try this out, this is actually what you'll see. So when we're provisioning, as I said, we need the change tracking capabilities, the ability to query the database and say, what's changed? You know, give me the deltas. So during that provisioning task, these sort of data, these data sync tables get created. There's some general metadata tables that we need. And then there's these tracking tables here. So these are the change tracking tables, and we query these tables to determine what's changed. Now, an important thing to note here, we're not storing every single change that happens on the system. It doesn't get logged in these tables, and these tables just get huge and grow unbounded and so on. This is just noting the fact, if you like, recording a timestamp that, okay, this row in your products table, for example, changed. And it's just effectively storing a timestamp or a couple of timestamps for that. So it's not storing all the data. When we actually, the service comes and says, okay, well, what's changed? I need to do a sync. It'll effectively join the tracking table. So, you know, address, DSS tracking, it'll join that with address to work out the actual data that's changed. So if you try this, this is what these tables are. So we can see that's all gone through. So I should be able to, let me quickly here. This is my Europe one. So that's now got the data. And this is my LT2. So that's now got the data as well. So I've got two on-premises SQL servers in sync, and both in sync with two databases, one in the US, one in Europe, all kept in sync now. Any changes happening to any of them will flow to the others. Okay. So I thought I'd just dig in a little into what's running behind the scenes here. And the first thing I wanted to highlight was, you know, we've built this and we're building this literally just as a Windows Azure service. If you've been to any of the Windows Azure talks or you've used Windows Azure, you know, you'll get web roles, worker roles, and so on. You know, we're using that exact same infrastructure that's available to everyone on Windows Azure. We've got a number of worker roles, web roles, and so on there. We're building it on top of the sync framework that gives us the basic synchronization capability, so we're lucky that we've got that, and we're building the cloud service on top of that capability and that platform. We have the web role that's running the UI that you saw there. And then we also utilize, you know, the various capabilities of the platform that I showed earlier on. So we're using tables, we're using blobs. Actually, we use the blobs for, if you've got large amounts of data, and large numbers of changes, we package them all up into batches, separate batches, and store them in blob store temporarily. And then once they're all there, we'll apply those changes. So we use the blob store. The sync groups, you know, the membership for the sync groups, the registered databases and so on, we actually store all that information in our own SQL Azure databases. So, you're like, data sync, you know, it's a good example of a regular Windows Azure cloud service. You've got your users databases that we've added that change tracking and that metadata to, both in the cloud and on-premises locally. And then there's that agent, the sync agent, that actually handles that communication between your on-premises SQL Server and the cloud. So we talked about the provisioning. You had the change tracking tables there. Just wanted to highlight that, you know, we don't actually change any of your existing tables. I think that's maybe one of the complaints of some of the other, one of the replication maybe actually adds a column or adds columns to the tables. So that's what those separate tables are. We leave your existing tables well alone. And we have a number of triggers that update those tables, but they're really kept small. You can have a look at them, try this out and have a look at them. They're really kept small to minimize the DML overhead. And then the final thing on SQL Server, what we need for the, you know, reliable synchronization and the consistency is we utilize snapshot isolation transactions. So we enable snapshot isolation on your SQL Server database. It's always enabled in the cloud on SQL Azure. I talked a little bit about the batching so that, you know, if you've got large amounts of data, you know, you've got your 10, 20, 30 gigabyte database and you're doing that first sync between SQL Server and the cloud, you know, we're batching that data up into chunks, sending it up, you know, a piece at a time. But if you can, your network goes down halfway through, when it comes back up, we'll continue on. You know, you don't have to start from scratch there. And then the final thing I just wanted to highlight was, you know, what's our sort of transactional consistency model and our transactional consistency guarantees? Because this is where, you know, it does differ, say, from something like SQL Server transactional replication. So we do more of a, it's more of a loosely coupled sync and a net, what's called a net changes sync. You know, you could have 10 changes have happened to a row in SQL Server in between synchronizations, and it's only the latest value that we'll actually transfer and will get synchronized. But one thing we don't record and don't synchronize, therefore, is the transactional boundaries that we used, if you like, on the source. So the best example here is maybe order and order details. You could have an application and it inserts a new order with one order details in one transaction. When that transaction, we effectively synchronize that data, it is possible on one of the other databases that the order gets committed in one transaction and the order details gets committed in another transaction. So you just have to be aware of that, and if your application, make your application cater for that case. So we've seen, I think, some of the main features, certainly the no-code configuration, pretty simple to configure, choose what data, choose how often the data gets synchronized. We've got full two-way synchronization. A lot of people just use one way, but we've got the full two-way synchronization, you know, with the conflicts, as you were saying, conflict handling and detection, and then the logging and monitoring and so on. And then obviously, again, compared to an on-premises solution, you know, we're the ones responsible for scaling this up. You know, more and more people use it, or the more and more databases you add into the system, you know, we're scaling up the system behind the scenes to cater for the requirements and the load, as we go. So in terms of investments, what we're working on, we're at CTP2 now, what we're working on for V1, one of the main items was the UI. You saw we had a fairly simple HTML UI there, but we really want to make it more visual. I think sort of having a visual layout of what you're synchronizing and when you synchronize and so on sort of really helps when you've got a distributed topology. So we sort of really want to provide, you know, great ease of use and, you know, enable you to visualize your topology and where your data is flowing. So we're going to invest in and are investing in, a much richer UI that's part of the Windows Azure portal. So I talked about the filtering earlier on. We've been working on that and actually talking about and said that we would allow you to specify the conflict resolution policy. We're also going to allow you to specify the sync direction per pair. That's some flexibility that people have asked for. And then today, actually, I'd pre-created all my databases in the schema. If you don't do that and those tables don't exist, today the service will actually create them. And it does a reasonable job today doing that, but, you know, it'll do a better job come V1. It doesn't quite do all the configuration options and so on at the moment. And then the last bullet point there is something that always comes up, and that's, this is great. I can get my first version of my application or my current version of my application. I've got a certain schema, but then I've updated it. I've got V2, V3. I've updated my schema. How do you cater for that? So in CTP2, as it stands, we don't. I mean, you would have to effectively remove delete your sync group and start again, sync the data again. And for V1... you know, we don't want you to have to do that, especially if you've got a large amount of data. So we're going to put in some capabilities to cater for at least what we think are the common schema updates, maybe updating a type from a varchar 100 to a 200, or adding a table, adding a column, that sort of thing. So you'd be able to do that, update your schema, and effectively reconfigure the sync without starting from scratch again on the data. So I think that's probably one of the main features that we plan to get in place for V1. So that was data sync. Any questions before I move on to reporting? No? Yeah. Yeah, so it's a good question on views or stored procedures. So in terms of what we synchronize, it is purely data, and that's what we're focusing on now. I would say we definitely get a number of requests. Well, can you can you do anything else as well? I've got all these other database objects, you know, for example, that are in DAX, you know, even logins, store procedures, triggers, and so on. Can you synchronize those? So definitely not for V1. We'll see what the feedback is for future versions. But, you know, I think, you know, there are the other sort of capabilities. The DAX, I think, probably is the main one moving forward, where, you know, effectively there's already a pretty good technology there for packaging up your schema, packaging up all your database objects, your stored procedures, views, triggers, logins, and so on, and handling both the initial deployment of those, but then also the update as well, and having the sort of smarts built into it, you know, if there's an existing deployment, on upgrading that. So it's definitely something that comes up quite a lot, but you know, I suppose my current thinking is that, you know, we don't want to replicate anything, so to speak, in the in DataSync that's already there, for, you know, for these existing technologies or capabilities, like the DAC packs and data tier applications. So, no plans at the moment, but we'll definitely see. Yeah. Right, so what about syncing Oracle databases or, you know, any third-party databases? Again, not for V1, but definitely something that we're thinking about for, you know, the next version or one or two versions time. I think we definitely see, if you have a look at you know, SQL Server as a whole, we've got a group that's focusing on producing migration tools, you know, for Sybase, for Oracle, actually even for Access and so on, to get, you know, migrate your applications from those platforms to either SQL Server or SQL Azure. And I think it's a logical extension to effectively say, well, no, I'm going to keep some of those, but I want to sync the data from these different systems into the cloud, for example. So not initially, but I think, you know, I think there's a reasonable chance that you'll see that from us in a future version. Okay, so for reporting. SQL Azure reporting, I mean, it's very simply about, you know, taking the same great capabilities that you have reporting services and taking them up to the cloud and making it available as a cloud service. So the ability to have, you know, create reports in BI Dev Studio, use exactly the same tools that you do today with SQL Server reporting services. And instead of uploading that RDL or that report definition to your reporting services server, you upload it to the cloud to SQL Azure reporting. And then you can get effectively a URL and browse those reports and get a URL so that a report gets rendered in the web browser. And obviously, instead of pulling the data from SQL Server, it's going to be pulling the data from SQL Azure. And then again, you can take those reports and you can embed them in applications. So in the context of the cloud, you could have a Windows Azure application, a website, for example, and use the report control and embed a report in your application, make it deeply embedded as part of the application, and get that rich insight and reporting capability as part of your applications. So we'll have a look at that in a second. So it's, I mean, pretty much the standard benefits for the cloud and so on. I think, you know, one that stands out for me here is the accessibility. This sort of applies to SQL Azure in general and the cloud in general. But for reporting as well, you know, I think you've got this ability now, you have a reporting service up in the cloud that you can maybe more easily give customers, users access to from anywhere, rather than having a on-premises reporting services and worrying about exposing that and some of the security issues and so on there. You know, I think it's more easily accessible in the cloud. So basically a lot of the same features, using the BI Dev Studio, pulling the data from SQL Azure, same sorts of visualizations, the charts and maps and so on, rendering the various formats and so on there. The last point, I think, is unique, which is sort of SOAP APIs. We'll see shortly. There's a bunch of SOAP APIs, so you can query, you know, what reports have I uploaded. You can upload reports, download reports, and almost like produce your own report manager experience using SOAP APIs. Sorry, say that again. Would we allow scheduling? So you mean subscriptions? So, no. Sorry. So there are a few features that aren't going to be available in the V1. Subscriptions is probably one of the main ones that isn't there, that a lot of people will ask for, and certainly on the list. Some of the other flexibility around some of the other data types won't be there initially, and some of those other things that are there. So one of the things that I'll point out is when it comes to the cloud and cloud services is really sort of the update model. As I mentioned, I mean, SQL Azure database now has been out for probably almost a year and a half, and every 3 to 5 months, we've rolled out updates to that. You know, I think it's one of the fundamental benefits of having a cloud service that we can do that. And we definitely plan with our services to roll out frequent updates. So, yeah, there's some things here that aren't here, but it's not like, don't think of it in terms of, well, it could be, two, three years before these become available. We do have the ability to roll out updates almost every few months with our cloud services. So let's have a quick look at reporting in action. So actually, I'm going to start off in, I had in the diagram there, using the same tools and the symmetry of the tools. So let me start off in BI Dev Studio here, and I created a simple report just on top of that AdventureWorks data set. So I'll start off here in Solution Explorer. The first difference is on my shared data sources here, if I open that up, is on the connection string. So you simply here, instead of my local server, I've got my SQL Azure server here, and this is pointing at the US database. And actually, the reason for that is that reporting services itself for the CTP is actually hosted in that same data center. So the sort of like the reporting service and the data is as close together as possible. So then that data source here, it's used by reference by this data source, and then I've got a simple data set. Which simply pulls out, city, state, province, and country, region for all the customers. And then I've got, the simple pie chart and a simple table to visualize that data. So let me hit preview. I'll just refresh that again just to make sure it's the latest and greatest. So this will go out. So obviously this is running locally in BI Dev Studio and is going out querying the database there in the US data center, that database. Chug, chug, chug. Takes this long. Sometimes the network here is a little flaky, and I'll do it again, and it should come back straight away. We'll see. Yeah, there we go. So the question's on the data volume. Well, so at the moment with SQL Azure, the maximum database size is 50 gigabytes. Basically, our design point is, whatever SQL Azure will support, will support with data sync. Now, I mean, in terms of the actual performance, I mean, if you've got, let's say, I think I was just doing a few, I had almost, 1,700 rows there. I mean, I think if we had a look at the sync time, that completed in, 10, 15, 20 seconds, something like that. I mean, I think a lot of the time, though, that synchronization, it's going to be happening in the background. You're going to set it and forget it, basically, and it's going to run in the background. And whether that takes 20 seconds, 40 seconds, 60 seconds, I don't think a lot of the time it matters too much. But we're definitely doing a lot of work. I think where it does matter maybe more than anything else is on that initial sync and that initial load, if you like. So, we're definitely working on making that as fast as we can. I mean, it's not going to be ever as fast as effectively blasting the data in on multiple threads using BCP or something like that. But it's not bad. It's not too far off. I mean, we try to be pretty efficient. So thank you for the question. That came back there. So we can see we've got the data here. Nice, just simple visualization. So let's just, I just thought I'd upload this. So I just thought I'd just prove it's this one that's going up. I'll just update the time there. And then what I can do is, if you have a look at the properties then, this is the regular properties, but you can see my server here. So I can simply deploy. That'll do the build, and then we can see it's deploying out to the server. If I hadn't, tried this out just beforehand. If I hadn't done this for a while, it would ask for my credentials so I can upload it to the server, and there we go, that's succeeded. So here, I need my username. And pretty simple UI here for the moment. And what I did is I put this in, deployed this to a folder for me. And here's my report. So fingers crossed, you should look at this. And this should be basically the same report with a updated time on it. It's like the last one. Someone got another question? Oh, there we go. Too late. I'll answer it in a minute. Okay, so very quickly, time's marching on. Let me just show you very quickly an embedded report. So this is a Visual Studio project. It's an Azure, Windows Azure project. ASP.simple, very simple ASP.net, sort of the default ASP.net page here. Simple text saying it's the report viewer. And then we've got the report viewer control. So if I go into the CS behind that, we can see the configuration. So simply all I have to do is configure, again, the URL. Where's the URL to get the report from? What's the path to the report? And then get my credentials so I can authenticate when I get there. So all I need to do is run this. And this will, again, this will take a little. So this is just going to run. I'm not going to deploy this while we wait to Windows Azure. I'll just run this using the local dev fabric. But hopefully you'll get the idea. So it's created two windows here. One of them's for the SOAP. This is actually a sample. It's available up on MSDN and the SQL Azure reporting section. There's a couple of samples there. So you can go and try these things out yourself afterwards if you want. So we can see on the SOAP here, this sort of just gives a very simple UI enumerating all the reports that are up there. On this one here, so this is my ASP.net page, and we can see I've basically got exactly the same report. So the last thing I thought I would do here is really show how data sync can be used in conjunction with reporting. And I think this could be a pretty common use, actually, using these two together. So perhaps I've got this scenario here where I do have my data, and it's in my SQL Server database, and this is going to be maybe my authoritative copy. And I'm going to make an updates here, but I really want to, make my data and publish my data via reporting. So I want my applications are going to update this data locally. I want to share it out to the cloud and then have my reports reflect that. So let me, here, my local SQL server, I can go to, what was I going to use? The address. So I've got my address table here, and I was thinking, what's a quick way just to show something that'll show up pretty easily on the report? So what I thought I could do here on the address table was to update the address table, and I want to set the, I'm going to move everyone move anyone to Canada. Oops. So everyone in Washington State is going to get moved to Canada. Is it country region? Always catches me out. So here we go. So it's updated 51 rows there. So now let's go back to data sync. Go to my sync group. And sync that. So this should go pretty quickly. It's issuing three syncs here. So this is actually going to take these changes locally again and push them out to my other local database and my two cloud databases, one in the US, one in Europe. And the US one gets reflected in the report. So actually, I should wait until that specifically says it's finished. Yep, well, that's finished. And let me go here. I'll hit refresh there. And we had 254 here, customers in the US. Now I've got 211 and 43. There's 51 rows updated, but there's some funny, not all the customers have the address. Or my join is ruling some of these things out. So the 43 customers returned by the query that were in the US are now in Canada. And then I can go back to my embedded report here. I can, in this case, maybe just F5 it, and I should get the same here. So here we can really sort of see these two services, working together, and I do think that, a lot of people will want to do this. Oops. Let's just wait for that. There we go. So 211 now. So in terms of updates from what we've seen from reporting, what can you expect coming up for 4v1? And the main visible thing, or I suppose both of these are visible, main functional thing is going to be a lot more work around users and permission management and permissions to reports. It's pretty restrictive today in terms of you pretty much have to have the one account, and you use that account to upload a report, and then you need to use the same credentials to access the report. So there's a lot more work going into making it so that you can have, multiple users and grant permissions to users and so on for the reports. And then performance improvements as well as the other main area of investment between now and V1. So I thought to summarize, both of these are in CTP today. Both in CTP today. The actual program for this, for both of these is officially closed. But I've got my email address here, so if any of you want to, in the next slide, if anyone want to contact me, you want to access these CTPs, I'll be able to give you access. So if you want to play with them, just contact me. From both the services, pretty much aligned. So we're going to have one future CTP in the summer, a few months' time, that's going to be a public CTP. It'll be open. Both of these will be open to everyone. And then sometime in the fall, certainly well before the end of the year, we want to release, if you like, the final V1 version of the services. So here's the further information. There's my contact information at the bottom there if you want to play with the CTPs or you have any further questions after this. And then I put some other references to various sites where you can get both overview information and detailed information about these services, the blogs, feature voting, and the forum to use if you try them out, the forum to use to post further questions and post feedback as well. I think that's probably it anyway. So with that, I'll finish up. I've probably got a minute or two for questions, but thank you for coming along. I really hope you enjoyed the conference. Thank you. I'll leave that up there for you. Any other questions? I'll be here for a few minutes afterwards if anyone wants to see me.